The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
In the East Gallery, we have Reverend Jerry Leet Witters, who comes by to acknowledge all MLAs and the work they do. And perhaps in the next couple of weeks, he conclude us all in his prayers. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to commend the generous and compassionate spirit demonstrated by Truro's Sam's Pizza. On Wednesday evenings, the staff at Sam's takes their wood-fire-cooked pizzas down to Truro's Homeless Outreach Society to share with our community members experiencing homelessness. Taking pressure off volunteers and giving the Outreach Society a bit of a break from having to plan a menu for that night. They've been doing this for the past 3 years, Mr. Speaker. This is an exemplary of community spirit in Truro. It's a sample of why I'm so proud to represent this district, and I'd like the House to join me in recognizing the work of the entire team at both Sam's Pizza and the Truro Homeless Outreach Society. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
Order, please. We'll now move on to oral questions put by members to ministers. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. Today, the Council to Improve Classroom Conditions issued their report. You know what? I do think we should all give them a big round of applause and a big thanks for the work that they have done. In fact, Mr. Speaker, that council got more work done in a few weeks than this government got done for education in 3.5 years. And you know what? It's true. And you know what, Mr. Speaker? After the way this government treated the teachers of Nova Scotia, it's particularly impressive the work that they got done. For example, Mr. Speaker, for 3 years, teachers have been asking for caps on our classrooms, and the Premier said no. He told them we couldn't afford it. He told them it would cost $41 million, Mr. Speaker, and I will table that estimate that the Premier and his government made when he was telling them no. Now, on the even election, it only costs 5.9. All of a sudden, Mr. Speaker, I'll ask the Premier, was he overestimating the cost of class caps for 3 years, or is he underestimating it now?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to, again, thank those teachers who came across the province, from across the province, to work with the department to lay out improvements that we could continue to make in the classroom. I want to remind the leader of the Conservative Party that successive budgets here in this province, we've continued to put class caps. We started from P to 3. We went from 3 to 6. Very proud of the work that the classroom teachers have done over the last couple of weeks, Mr. Speaker. I also want to remind the Honourable Member, he's the one who said he would disband that council. We're going to continue, we're going to continue, Mr. Speaker, to invest in classrooms, and we're going to continue to invest in teachers, Mr. Speaker, because our kids deserve it.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, we would have had class caps a long time ago if we actually had a Premier and a government that had listened to teachers in the first place. But it took an election to get them to pay attention, Mr. Speaker, and that's a shame, because the students and teachers of Nova Scotia, they deserve a government with vision, not just in the last week of their mandate, but with vision all 4 years. Mr. Speaker. The Premier even went out of his way to tell teachers you can't afford class caps. It's $41 million. Now today, by magic, it's $5.9 million, Mr. Speaker. How can teachers and parents trust any number this Premier ever presents on education when he makes the numbers up to suit his own political needs?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member. And you know, Mr. Speaker, I again want to thank those teachers who came in here. And I want to tell each and every one of them that I value and respect what they've been doing in classrooms, Mr. Speaker. And I value the work that they've done with this committee. And I respect and I believe in the things that they brought forward to our government. We will continue to work for them. We will continue to make investments in classrooms, no matter how negative the honourable member will come. It's one thing to be negative towards us, Mr. Speaker, in this House. But to criticise those teachers who've come in here for 15 times, they were the ones who, you should stand up and congratulate them.
The honourable leader of the official opposition.
Mr. Speaker, we've seen how much this government respects teachers. We've seen how much they respect students. They locked the students out of our classrooms last December. They told teachers they were greedy. They told teachers they were asking for too much. They told teachers they were wrong about classrooms, Mr. Speaker. Teachers know exactly how much that Premier respects them, Mr. Speaker. If he means what he says, then he should stand in his place now, and I will ask him, apologize to the teachers of Nova Scotia for calling them greedy when there was no election and suddenly giving them the legitimate things they were asking for on the eve of a vote.
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, again, I want to remind the Honourable Member, he may have missed in the number of budgets that we've introduced, that each and every time we've invested in classrooms across the province, Mr. Speaker. We continue to do so, Mr. Speaker. Not a single time, Mr. Speaker, we've been sitting, this is the first question, Mr. Speaker, that we've had on education from the Honourable Member. While teachers have been continuing to work across, continue to improve classrooms, I want to remind, Mr. Speaker, that I want to thank those teachers who continue to work in here, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank all those Nova Scotians who worked with our government over the last 4 years to put ourselves in good fiscal health. And each and every time along that journey, we invested in classrooms. And yes, Mr. Speaker, we asked all public servants that we can provide a wage increase that we believed was fair at the same time while we were investing in classrooms and health care and other services that Nova Scotians have come to expect and deserve, Mr. Speaker. It is a balanced approach. It's a different approach than the honourable member would bring forward. We're very proud of our record, and we're grateful for those teachers who worked with us.
The honourable leader in the House for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, the stories emerging from the healthcare workers and patients about the state of the emergency rooms in this province is beyond troubling. I ask all MLAs in this House to picture themselves or a loved one shivering on a gurney in a hallway for hours on end with no privacy. Hallway medicine is not a solution to overcrowding our ERs. It has to stop, Mr. Speaker. It has to stop today. So I'd like to ask the Premier, how will this budget in hallway medicine in our hospitals today?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, again, thank the Honourable Member for the question. We continue, the Minister of Health has continued to work with health care providers, with the health authority, to continue to improve infrastructure across the province. We continue to work on an human resource plan to ensure that we have doctors, nurse practitioners, family practice nurses, all health care providers and communities practicing. We know there's more work to do, Mr. Speaker. The Honourable Member has increased emergency room capacity in Dartmouth General here on the Halifax side of the harbour, Mr. Speaker. We're going to continue to make those investments and work with communities because, as the Honourable Member says, Nova Scotians deserve top quality health care.
The Honourable Leader in the House for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Premier, to him, on a continuous theme, it continues to get worse. Mr. Speaker, the Premier continues to talk about strategic investments. While I know we have to make long-term investments, this Premier cannot ignore the short-term needs that are putting the health and safety of workers and patients at risk. He cannot ignore the patients lying in hallways and family rooms. He cannot strip away the dignity in this way, while at the same time standing here in this House patting himself on the back. So I'd like to ask the Premier, how can he stand here today and celebrate this budget while our hospitals are resorting to hallway medicine to deal with the overcrowding in our ERs?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the honourable member for the question. I want to remind him the budget, I believe in the health department, has increased by $75 million this budget. The last NDP budget, it was $50 million increase, Mr. Speaker. We continue to invest in health care. We continue to make sure that the infrastructure is in place. We're going to continue to make sure that we continue to go out and work with those health care providers. One of the things that has become very clear, Mr. Speaker, that the health care infrastructure was ignored for a very long time, Mr. Speaker, particularly was ignored under the NDP government. They made no investment in improving that, and we're going to continue to make that investment.
The Honourable Leader in the House for the New Democratic Party.
The third time, Mr. Speaker, I hope the Premier gets a chance to at least try to address this question. Mr. Speaker, I doubt those lying hospital hallways or family rooms are celebrating this budget. In fact, I bet they are certainly disappointed, perhaps even angered, by the standing ovations that this Liberal government gave themselves yesterday. The Code Census report available to the Premier, the stories emerging from the overcrowding ERs are in the media, and the Premier should read these, Mr. Speaker. How can this government ever fix the problems when they won't even admit there's a problem in the first place? So yeah. I asked the Premier, will he admit today that there is a crisis, I underline the word crisis, in our health care system created by this government for the lack of attention to the front care health givers?
The Honourable Premier.
Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. The challenges in health care, Mr. Speaker, is the fact that Nova Scotians gave the NDP a chance to govern and they completely ignored the health care infrastructure.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, yesterday...
Order, please. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition. Order, please. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yesterday, Halifax Mayor Mike Savage said he was surprised by the $7.5 million purchase of the Whopper lands in Bayers Lake. In fact, the mayor said it was a surprise to all of us, and I will table that for the benefit of the House, Mr. Speaker. We know this land was bought without a proper tender at 12 times its assessed value. It seems odd that the government didn't even talk to HRM about that purchase, since they are a significant landholder in the area, and they may have been able to swap some land cost-free. So I'd like to ask the Premier, why didn't his government look to the land holdings of the Halifax Regional Municipality, which are already owned by the taxpayer, when it decided to buy the Whopper lands?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable for the questions. I've said to him a number of times in this House, when we looked at the people who were using the facility, 60% of them are outside of HRM, Mr. Speaker. They would be funneled downtown to the peninsula. It didn't make sense to continue that. This was an opportunity for we are a generation that can shape the healthcare delivery model. When we looked at the 40% of those in HRM are using the facility, Mr. Speaker, many, many of them live out in that catchment area. There are 15 pieces of land, property that we looked at. We narrowed it down to negotiate. And, Mr. Speaker, the mayor is the mayor of HRM. I'm the premier of Nova Scotia, and this is a healthcare facility for all Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Well, Mr. Speaker.
Order, please. Order, please. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, it's hard to ask questions when the Liberal and the NDP members are being so negative. That's for those guys. Mr. Speaker, the Premier seems to know better than the Chief City Planner for HRM about where this facility should be located, because Chief Planner Bob Bjork says it'll be nearly impossible to provide adequate transit services out there. This is a direct quote. And he added that that area is already congested. But the government went ahead anyway and bought the Whopper Drop lands without tender, for 12 times their assessed value, Mr. Speaker. That $7.5 million is coming out of the health care budget. It could be used for doctors. It could be used for facilities. But instead, it's being used to buy land in an area without proper services that's already congested. The only way that this will ever be cleared up is if the government releases all the documents that were involved in this decision. So will the Premier agree, before the end of today, to release all the documents related to the Whopper Drop land purchase?
The Honourable Premier.
Speaker, again, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. Mr. Speaker, staff at Transportation Infrastructure Renewal did an outstanding job, Mr. Speaker, of looking at traffic patterns of people. They came through, Mr. Speaker, were using that facility. They looked at 15 different sites, Mr. Speaker, narrowed it down to a few. They went into negotiations with this site. This site will be ready for construction, Mr. Speaker, when it's taken over by the province. Water, sewer, roads will be brought in, Mr. Speaker. Blasting will have taken place. This is an investment that is in the best interest of all Nova Scotians to continue to deliver health care, Mr. Speaker. And I look forward to the members in that community going out, knocking on doors, Mr. Speaker, hearing from the residents that live in that area who are grateful, Mr. Speaker, that a government is finally listening to them and putting the health care infrastructure where the people live.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, what the government delivered to Nova Scotians yesterday was a budget of zeros. While that side of the House was patting itself on the back, the rest of the province was scratching their heads and wondering why the budget didn't include any of the investments the province desperately needs. Wait times for nursing homes in some areas of the province, Mr. Speaker, are over 1,000 days. So I'd like to ask the Premier, how many nursing home beds were created under this new, will be created under this new budget?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I also want to thank the Minister of Health for the continued work he's been doing in reducing the wait list for long-term care facilities. I also, Mr. Speaker, I also want to thank the Nova Scotia Government Employees Union and the Nurses Union, Mr. Speaker, who worked with government to eliminate home care wait lists, Mr. Speaker, across the province, continuing to make sure that seniors get to stay home as long as possible. And it's through that level of collaboration and cooperation that we're continuing to provide people with those services.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Zero, Mr. Speaker. There are so many vulnerable Nova Scotians today as we stand here debating and asking questions that are in hospitals throughout the province that need long-term care placements, Mr. Speaker. They're waiting months, Mr. Speaker. Something else missing in the budget is collaborative emergency centres, or the mention of collaborative emergency centres, Mr. Speaker. This year, emergency room closures are up, and they've been up ever since this government took office, Mr. Speaker. Emergency rooms in Halifax and in industrial Cape Breton are bursting at its seams, forcing patients in hallways and makeshift rooms. So I'd like to ask, will the Premier tell me how many new collaborative emergency centres are included in this budget?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll ask the Minister of Health to respond.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. What I'd like to tell the member opposite and the House and all Nova Scotians is that I remember today when there were 350 patients waiting in hospitals for placement. Today we run between 150 and 175 right across the province, many in transitional care. When I delivered my first address to the House of Assembly in 2014, we had 2,563 on the wait list for nursing homes. Today we're at 1,100 across Nova Scotia for 133. And you know,
order, please. Order, please. The Honourable Minister of Health.
Mr. Speaker, the story gets absolutely better because we offered those on the list proper care at home. And today across Nova Scotia, again, when I first reported, we had over 14,000 on-service hours. Today we're down to a couple of hundred just-in-time home care service in our province.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in 2012, the now Premier was very critical and negative about the way that the NDP rigged the electoral boundary process and the boundaries that were drawn as a result of that process. In fact, he said at the time, this whole process has undermined the confidence in many ways of the voter, and I'll table that quote for the benefit of the House. I'd like to ask the Premier today if he knew that the process used by the NDP was wrong in 2012, why is he insisting on using those same boundaries today?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, we agreed with the court when they said the former Attorney General, the NDP Attorney General, interfered with the process from an independent commission. We've reached out to the complainant who took the complaint to the court and asked them to give us the definition of effective representation, what they believe is effective representation. We told them at that point, and we're reaching out to the African Nova Scotia community for that very answer, so that when we reconstitute a commission, we'll put them out into that community, and we'll make sure, Mr. Speaker, that when the new Boundaries Commission goes out and sets the boundaries, that it will be a reflection of what the minority communities have felt was missing in the last one. And, Mr. Speaker, when that commission is struck and those boundaries are set, whatever election comes after that will follow those boundaries.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, the Premier just earlier bragged about being the Premier of Nova Scotia. His number one job is to protect the constitutionally enshrined rights and freedoms of Nova Scotians. You don't need, Mr. Speaker, someone else to tell you what effective representation is. It's in the Constitution of Canada, Mr. Speaker, and there have been court cases that have provided that definition. And you know what, Mr. Speaker? Mr. Speaker, the member for Yarmouth has been very negative today. It's hard to ask questions. Mr. Speaker, I'd have to ask the Premier, doesn't he want to know whether the boundaries are constitutional or not before he calls an election? Wouldn't it be reasonable to actually find out first, Mr. Speaker? He was against the boundaries in the last election, Mr. Speaker. Now he's ready to turn a blind eye to whether the current boundaries are unconstitutional, Mr. Speaker. In fact, he said at the time he would never compromise on the minority rights, Mr.
Speaker.
Does
the member have a question?
My question, Mr. Speaker, is pretty direct. Why is the Premier compromising the minority rights of Nova Scotians now when he was against it before the last election?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the court did not say the boundaries are unconstitutional, Mr. Speaker. What the court said was that the Attorney General under the NDP believed he had the same answer as the leader of the Conservative Party just stood up and said, Mr. Speaker. He said he interfered and was inappropriate. What he said was, and what we have said, we're reaching out to the Acadian community, the African Nova Scotia community, and let's have a conversation. Does the Acadian community believe that they're fairly represented by the three protected ridings that existed before? I've heard from people in Shettacant, Mr. Speaker, who say they didn't feel represented by those three communities. The largest Acadian community is in HRM. What we're asking for is, what does the Acadian community believe is effective representation? The same question we're asking to the African Nova Scotia communities all across Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker, from one end to the other. We want them to be engaged in this process so when we reconstitute a new Boundaries Commission, Mr. Speaker, we can give them the instructions that reflect the values of minorities in this province, and that when the Boundaries Commission is struck and are laid out, they will feel like they've been heard and represented.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Agriculture. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotia has invested more than $900,000 to increase beehive numbers, and that has been successful. There are now more than enough beehives in the province to supply the pollination needs. And in fact, there's the Perennia bee line, and I will table that, which shows more than 800 hives available. And if you look at that, most of the major growers are not listed on that. Major beekeepers are not listed on that. In fact, you could easily double that number, the number of hives available for pollination. Mr. Speaker, the reason for increasing our own beehive numbers was to keep pests like the small hive beetle out of Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, my question for the Minister is, given the more than adequate numbers of beehives within Nova Scotia, why would the Minister risk importing small hive beetle by permitting 500 hives to come into the province from small hive beetle infested southern Nova Ontario?
Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The member raises a very good question. And indeed, we have, according to the information been put out by the bee industry, we have 24,000 pollinators in the province. That's not accurate. We have 20,000. This year we had a 15% death in the beehives. We're down between 17,000 and 18,000. And that's actual numbers that have been provided by themselves and the census is done every year. So, and we also implemented the most rigid inspection for the small hive beetle in the world. That is true. Some of the beekeepers are importing bees from Australia, queen bees and clusters that small hive beetle is from, and also from California. So this is a very major issue that we intend to address.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Mr. Speaker, my suspicion is the Minister himself wouldn't know a small hive beetle if he saw it, and he's quoting numbers. I would challenge him to table that information. He stated things in the Vanguard, the Yarmouth Vanguard, that he has no support for, and I would suggest to him that the growers, the producers in the industry, know the business, and the Minister does not know the business. And I would suggest to him that he table where there is small hive beetle in other provinces other than small southern Ontario, which he stated in the Vanguard, which I will table. The minister also stated in the Vanguard, and I quote, when asked why hives wouldn't be imported from a province that doesn't have the pest, he replied that it was not up to the department to decide. It's up to the individuals who will be doing the importation.
Does the member have a question? Well, I would suggest
that the minister has an obligation to protect the industry. That's his obligation. Will the minister defend the local beekeepers and the bee industry here and do his job?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Well, as a result of the concerns brought forward by the bee industry and the research we've done on this, and we have all the facts and figures which we will table later today or on Monday, we are going to do a complete... We're going to do a complete review of the program. When I came to the department, the goal was to double the number of hives in the province to get it to where you don't have to import bees. We're not convinced we're at that point yet. However, we're going to put on hold everything we're doing. We're going to do a complete inventory of all bees in the province of Nova Scotia to see if the numbers are accurate. And then we're going to look at the program. Again, when I came to the department, the... I will answer the question, Mr. Speaker, when people are prepared to listen. I'm in no rush.
Order, please. The Honourable Minister of Agriculture, with a couple of seconds left.
When I first came to the department, the total bee pollination expansion program was $125,000. I increased it to $250,000 a year. That's a substantial investment in Nova Scotia's bee industry.
All right.
And now... I'm in no rush. Absolutely no rush.
Okay. The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Finished. They go on and on and on and on with no answer. So, Mr. Speaker, the Premier abandoned negotiations with the federal government to have a health transfer that takes into account Nova Scotia aging population. Instead, he has tried to sell Nova Scotians on a side deal that provides less money overall with a pocket of funding for home care. Well, Mr. Speaker, looking at this budget, it's hard to know what the government plans to do with that money because there are no increases in the budget for home care nursing services or support services. Mr. Speaker, will the Premier tell us why this money isn't included in the budget lines for the direct care for seniors?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. As you know, we negotiated a health accord with the national government at a 3% increase across the entire amount of that would be delivered to the province from the federal government. We also had dedicated funding, $360 million roughly for home care. Again, about another $170 million for adolescent mental health. That funding is a 10-year agreement. It will come in. I also want to remind the honourable member of the great work that the Minister of Health has been doing along with our partners with the NSGEU and the NSNU when it comes to home care, to eliminating lists across the province. We've invested in every budget in home care, Mr. Speaker, and we're going to continue to do so.
The honourable member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to thank the Premier for his answer, but the Premier does not have the facts from his minister. The fact is that home care supports have a long waiting list. I personally know that. Mr. Speaker, home care seems to be the Premier's answer to everything, but I don't think he tells Nova Scotians the whole truth. We still have seniors waiting for home support services. Like this government's approach to doctors and collaborative care, there's just no plan. Mr. Speaker, what is the Premier's plan for supporting seniors who urgently need home support services? It's the home support services, and maybe the Minister can explain what that is to the Premier.
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to thank the Minister of Health. This is a very serious issue. We know, and people have told us, Mr. Speaker, they want to stay home as long as possible. That's why we've continued to make those investments in home care supports. I would encourage the Honourable Member to continue to work with the Home Care Delivery Agency in her community. If the Minister of Health could connect her with the right people. But I do want to thank our sister organizations that have worked with us to ensure that we are providing those supports at home.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On December 23rd, the Minister of Finance and the Premier put out a press release that stated the government had reached an agreement with the federal government on health care and that it was a 10-year agreement, and it went on to provide details of that funding. Now, does the Minister still stand behind that release that an agreement was reached and was being implemented with the federal government?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As released in December, as people know, there was a Finance Ministers meeting. We met with federal, provincial, and territorial ministers of finance. We had health ministers actually join us at that meeting to have discussions about the health transfer amounts from the federal government going towards health care. Earlier in that week, we failed to come to an agreement. But throughout that week, back in December, Mr. Speaker, we continued our discussions with the federal government, working to get the best deal that we could get for Nova Scotia and for Nova Scotians to invest in health care. Mr. Speaker, the budget that I tabled yesterday demonstrates that indeed the transfers from the federal government for health care have increased. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
I see, Mr. Speaker, the Minister avoided answering the question whether he stands by the release, which I guess is the answer. In a scrum following a more recent Public Accounts Committee meeting, the Minister's deputy was quoted as saying there was no agreement. And in the meeting he said, quote, there usually isn't an agreement per se, but there's an understanding. And in the same testimony he said talk of an agreement ended earlier in December, before the release came out. So why did the minister put out a press release announcing an agreement when his deputy says talk about an agreement had already stopped? And how can we have faith in any of the minister's statement, including his budget, since he has claimed there was an agreement that did not exist?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, I'd just like to highlight that an agreement coming to a common understanding, Mr. Speaker, is a relatively accepted definition there. In terms of the agreement that was reached, the agreement that was reached, Mr. Speaker, between the federal government with almost all provinces and territories, Mr. Speaker, you can go and look at the press releases, Mr. Speaker, from each and every one of them that came to agreements of the same sort and nature, and the press releases, Mr. Speaker, in each and every case follow the similar wording and description. Mr. Speaker, we have the same deal with the federal government for those transfers. We've seen increases from the federal government, particularly targeted investments in home care and mental health, Mr. Speaker. These are the shared priorities that the provincial government has with our federal partners. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question for the Minister of Education. Recent FOIPOP documents shed light on the way this Liberal government decides which communities get new schools. And I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. There's a vetting process which ranks schools by need. However, Cabinet makes the final decision. And it appears that political need is a major component to that decision-making process. My question, Mr. Speaker, can the Minister explain why five of the schools that jumped the queue were located in Liberal constituencies?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Chris. Thank you. You could be. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you to the member for the question, a question that has been answered many times. There are a number of factors that are considered when new school constructions are planned. And the first priority is the program for students. The next priority is for boards to submit to the department their list of capital requests, and that is asked for, considered. We also look at the capacity within the capital budget of the province. We also look at the regional fairness. All of those factors come together, and it is not political. I can tell you when we... when we were elected in 2013, we accepted all of the announcements that had been made by the previous government, and we moved forward with those. Some of those were not in Liberal-held ridings. We did not consider that. We considered the communities that had been promised those schools, and we followed through on them.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Mr. Speaker, when asked to explain how schools in her own riding and in the Premier's riding got approved over others that were ranked higher, the Minister has said that geography plays a role in that decision-making. Sure. My question to the Minister, can the Minister explain how a school in Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg, that is ranked under number 12 was passed over and a school in Dartmouth North that ranked number 41 was chosen?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think it's more important, Mr. Speaker, to talk about the situation in Spring Hill. The town of Spring Hill has requested A&A for our new school for two elementaries. All governments, PC, NDP, and Liberal, have said no. We will not build a new school. We will do a renovation. But you know, Mr. Speaker, not once has the member from that area ever written to me, ever talked to me, ever asked me, ever spoke to me on behalf of the good people of Spring Hill about the needs in his community.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Justice. Mr. Speaker, last year I tabled a bill to have mental health court available throughout the province. At the time, the minister stated a bill was not required. She could do this within existing legislation. Mr. Speaker, my question for the minister is this. If that is the case, why has this not happened yet, given the great need for mental health court throughout the province?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate the question from the member opposite. He and I had a chance to tour the Central Correctional Facility not very long ago, and we've had discussions about mental health in Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, we have an extension of various courts in our province. Wellness courts is what I'm thinking of, and they encompass mental health and addictions, and they really are led by our judiciary. Each time one is undertaken, it's because we have a provincial court judge sitting in some corner of the province who's agreed that it's a priority and has work to change the opportunity for a different sort of court in their area. The most recent, Mr. Speaker, is an announcement that Wagmatcook will have a GLADU, which is a cultural court, as well as a wellness court, and it is the result of the judge sitting in Port Hawkesbury who has spearheaded that. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank the Minister for that answer. Mr. Speaker, in Kentville, the Health Authority and courts work together to realign existing services and staff to provide mental health court for very little extra cost. Could not this model be used throughout the province? That's my question for the Minister. Has she looked into the Kentville model, and can it not be spread throughout the province?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I agree that where the communities have come together with the cooperation or leadership from the judiciary, it has been possible. The mental health court in Dartmouth, which is our one that's actually named a mental health court, has actually been fairly expensive to do with the way it's structured. But it's having tremendously positive results, and I know it's a real advantage to so many people who have mental health and who should not really be seen in the regular court system. It requires more sensitivity. So I appreciate the comment, the suggestion from the member that more of these courts could be done with the communities coming together and putting their resources on the table. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Needham.
Mr. Speaker, thousands of Nova Scotians don't make enough money to meet their basic needs. They go without food or medication or heat because their pockets are empty. In yesterday's budget address, Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Finance said putting money into the pockets of Nova Scotians who need it was his government's top priority. Mr. Speaker, since the Minister of Finance has said repeatedly that giving people more money to spend is good economic policy, I'd like to ask the Minister of Community Services why there is no increase to income assistance rates in this budget.
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, and I thank the member for the question. I have stood in this House for 3.5 years and talked about transformation. I have not talked about $2 or $4 incremental increases. I have not talked about tinkering. What I have talked about is innovative social policy change that will make a difference in the lives of people who need it the most. Mr. Speaker, yesterday's budget introduced a standardized household rate. Innovation, bold, a leader in this country so that people on income assistance will have a substantial increase and they will be able to keep more of their income when they work. That makes a difference in social policy, Mr. Speaker. That makes a difference.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Needham.
Mr. Speaker, many income assistance recipients have been working as long as the minister and with members of her department for years already on that transformation process. I would like to know, when are they going to see the change in their checks so that they can actually have a dignified life in this province?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, we have been working with over 1,800 stakeholders over the last 3.5 years, while that government, who are the supposed beacons of social policy in Nova Scotia, gave people $2 and $4 increments without changing the system that keeps people in poverty, which keeps people in poverty. We have made a difference, and we'll continue to make a difference in the province. Mr. Speaker, I was on this system in the 1990s, and it was the same system that we came into that government blew up waiting lists on affordable housing. So we can thank our lucky stars that party is not responsible for social policy in the province of Nova Scotia.
Honourable Member for Inverness.
Speaker, question for the Minister of Health.
Order, please. Order, please. The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, question for the Minister of Health. Mr. Speaker, in 2013 here in Halifax, the Canadian Pediatric Society met and they made a recommendation to governments across the country. They asked that governments ensure that children are afforded equal access to basic treatment and preventative oral care, regardless of where they live or their socioeconomic status. In 2015, the Oral Health Advisory Group, however, they recommended to the minister that this government eliminate the universal coverage of universal plan and replace it with a needs-based plan. So my question is to the minister, will the minister confirm that he will protect our universally accessible children's dental plan?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. What I can say to the member opposite is absolutely we will protect the children's plan. In fact, we need a more robust plan.
The previous government went in the wrong direction, as the Dental Association of Nova Scotia gave us very specific directions. Spreading it over 14, 15, 16 years was not the way to go, but to do the most work in the early years, and that plan is getting very close to its final delivery.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
I'd like to thank the Minister for that, Mr. Speaker. And I think that is one of the points. It's not just universal care, but it's actually getting children into the dentist's chair. And we can see, Mr. Speaker, that I think out of about 150,000 children who are eligible in this province, only 50,000 are finding their way into the dentist's chair. And it's not because of money, Mr. Speaker, it's universal care. Mr. Speaker, we need a care that is proactive. We could be preventing more diabetes, we could be preventing chronic disease versus having children in emergency rooms, getting dental care, having to be put under anesthetic because emergencies have arisen because this preventative care wasn't done. So I'm hoping to hear, and the Minister has provided a fairly positive response there. My final question, Mr. Speaker, is will the Minister acknowledge, and I think he has, and perhaps he can tell us about how we can get more children into the dentist chairs.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and the member for Inverness raises an extremely valid, well-researched perspective here in the legislature this morning. When we came to office, we had to work at that end of the spectrum where we needed to increase surgical work at the IWK and had to hire additional pediatric dental special surgeons because of a lack of work in the early years. We're retrenching. We're going to direct more towards those early years and prevent the serious and significant surgeries that have been required in adolescent years. And we hope to have that plan in front of Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. This could be perhaps the last opportunity that I have to stand in this place and have the privilege to ask a question to the Minister of Health. And my question is about a young couple that lost their home in Fort McMurray in their 30s, both teachers, decided to move back to Nova Scotia, and they are considering moving back out west this fall. They were able to find teaching jobs, which is great. They're not able to find a doctor. They need a doctor, as does many hundreds of people in Pictou West alone. Can the Minister please tell us if we will have a doctor in Pictou West before September?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. First of all, I was pleased to be part of the announcement at the Westville Clinic just a week ago, where we added an outstanding nurse to the team, to the collaborative practice in Westville. And what we'll be able to do there is add anywhere from 500 to 800 who are actually on the list that is now compiled. The doctors there very specifically said that's the list that they will go to pick off those people of Pictou County, Westville area first, but Pictou County generally, so that more can get primary care.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I spoke to that collaborative care the other day. They're not taking anyone. So let's just be clear on that. They've told everyone. They're not taking any more. The other part of this story is actually rather sad. This young couple were in the process of adopting in Alberta. They need a doctor. I was able to get the adoption agency to waive the part on the application where they don't have to have a full-time doctor. However, each of them needs a physical before the adoption process can go through. Will the minister please leave a legacy and help me get a physical for this young couple so that they can live their dream and grow their family and hang their hat in Nova Scotia, please. This may be his last opportunity, too, to help. My last opportunity may be your last opportunity. Please, let's work together, get them a physical. Promise me that, please.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And as the member opposite and many here in the House know, that I not only look after the global picture, or work to look after the global picture of Nova Scotia, I've also helped with many individual cases that have come my way, and I will certainly do my best in this particular case that have been raised here this morning.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question today is for the Premier. Yesterday, he talked about working with the film industry as if he's a regular patron of the arts or something. Now, this is the same Premier who thought that the film industry was getting a free ride, Mr. Speaker. A Premier who didn't understand the financial return to the province from investing in the industry, who thought they weren't paying taxes. So I'd just like to ask the Premier, as he tops up the Film and Television Incentive Fund on the eve of election, can he please at least apologize today to the many film industry workers who had to pack up and move away, some taking their families with them, because of his government's callous, short-sighted, and mean-spirited actions?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank all those in the film industry, Mr. Speaker, who continued to work with our government over the last year to continue to provide employment to Nova Scotia for many Nova Scotians. Mr. Speaker, very proud of the fact that the film fund she's talking about has a subsidy of 25%, but it is spread beyond just labour. She would know prior to that it was 50 to 65%. We said that was too high. We went down and said we could provide a subsidy that was real for Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. We've continued to make that investment. We'll continue to make that investment and work with them, Mr. Speaker. What's interesting, Mr. Speaker, is that the Honourable Member continues to stand in this House and complain and complain and complain. But you know what? The industry, Mr. Speaker, came and worked with us, and that's why they're working in Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Mr. Speaker, the film industry came and tried to work with this government because their hands were tied behind their backs, and they knew that if they didn't come and work with them, they had nothing, Mr. Speaker, nothing. So, Mr. Speaker, some extra money for the incentive fund will help some offshore service producers become viable again. However, companies wanting to grow our local, independent film industry have been seriously crippled by a lack of equity investment by this government and by the cutting of the Film and Television Development Fund, which have both helped to create a local industry. So my question for the Premier is, why is his government opposed to equity investment in the film industry that would help local producers tell our local stories right here in Nova Scotia instead of having to go off somewhere else where they can get it?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If the Honourable Member would stop complaining so much, she would actually listen and realize there are many people working in the province of Nova Scotia. We continue to invest in the film industry, Mr. Speaker, and the investment we're making is spread beyond, Mr. Speaker, just labour in those in the film industry, Mr. Speaker. It's spread across many sectors. We're seeing it based in the economy. We're seeing that grow in the economy. And I want to thank Screen Nova Scotia for continuing to work with us, to continue to try to provide an opportunity for many young Nova Scotians to be here. And I'm grateful for the fact, Mr. Speaker, they didn't accept the negativity of the Honourable Member and that party. They actually came to work with our government to provide opportunity.
Order, please. Time allotted for oral questions put by members to ministers has expired. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On a point of order, I, with great reluctance, need to correct a statement made by the Minister of Education during question period. As Member for Cumberland South, I'm very proud of the fact that I have raised the Spring Hill School in this House.
Is it a point of order or a disagreement of facts?
Presenting a point of order, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, you'll get this very quickly. I don't want to take up a lot of time. Both in this House in question period and in the examination of the estimates, the Minister raises the issue of letters in this House. One would think that the annual letter that she gets from the Chignecto Central School Board, which constantly presents their top priority for new construction as a new school for Spring Hill, would be enough. But given her answer today, Mr. Speaker, it's been very clear that politics actually do play a role in new school.